is sitting in a comfortable by dignified posture, whatever that means to you. If you want to close your eyes, closing your eyes. And bringing the attention to your feet. Noticing the feet down there on the ground, on the floor. Becoming aware of the sensations present on your feet in this moment. On the bottom of your feet. On the toes. The top of your feet. The heels. Now bringing the attention to the big toe of the right foot. And noticing its presence. And from there, opening the awareness to the whole body sitting here. From toes to head, noticing the position of your arms and your hands. In whatever position they are. Allowing the chair in which you are sitting to give you all the support that you need in this moment to be present, fully present in your own presence. Fully present in your own presence. As you breathe. As you breathe into the body and breathe out from the body. Thank you very much for having me here. First, I want to give thanks to Sister Gabrielle, to Vic, and to Cynthia for building up a sacred space for the exploration of the self. Of who am I. Thank you also to Tim for inviting me to come here to share with you my experience of the last 19 years here in this building at the University of Massachusetts Medical Center, in which I have been working in different departments. Also, my wife has been working there for years. We know those corridors and all those floors and what is going on in every corner very, very well. I want to thank also our first international president and co-founder of the Theosophical Society, Colonel Henry Steele Olcott, for the work that he did. And I quote from the Maha Chohan. That is the reason why Colonel Henry Steele Olcott, who works but to revive Buddhism, may be regarded as one who labors in the true path of theosophy. because Buddhism is stripped of its superstitions is eternal truth. And he who strives for the latter is striving for theosophia, divine wisdom, which is synonym of truth. Now, what is this thing that we call mindfulness that has become so popular in recent years? Mindfulness is a tool. It's a tool that every human being has, everyone. A tool for the cultivation and awakening of emotional intelligence. There is a distinction between these two kinds of intelligence, the intellectual and the emotional. One is limited, the intellectual one. Some people, some individuals become aeronautical engineers, incredible judges. Other people just will do simple tasks. Because in the intellect is a limitation, and that is fine. But the second one is different. The second one can be cultivated. And that is the one who helps everyone to live your own life. To move with confidence through the labyrinth that stands in between two breaths. The first one at birth, and the last one when we die. That is what allows us to move through this labyrinth. Then I consider myself personally an adventure, the adventure of life in between those two breaths. All this thing of mindfulness is about the cultivation of awareness, a waking up to our own life, to your own beauty, to your own dharma, your own dharma. And it's exactly the same what we are teaching now as the Buddha experienced 2,500 years ago and has been documented in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Sutra of Attention. I can tell you one thing. This particular practice is very simple, but it's not easy. It's simple, but not easy. And one more thing. As long as you breathe, and you need to have this in consideration, means in between those two breaths, the one in the beginning and the one at the end, as long as you breathe, there is more good with you than wrong. There is more good with you than wrong, and you can do this work. You can do it. You can engage into the practice and you can wake up. Don't be lazy. Don't be lazy. Wake up. We are accustomed to put thousands of excuses to avoid waking up. And in my experience in this hospital for 19 years, I am very reaffirmed and confident that every human being, if they put their heart into it, they can do it. Now, in this moment. Because that possibility is present, is there. Waking up to your own life, starting to take care of your own business, coming back to the here and now to cultivate your own garden once again. To cultivate your own garden once again. And right perception, because mindfulness, right perception, is more than that. Is the ability to approach things in a more effective way. And it requires deep intuition that is based in our own contemplative practice, in our own personal contemplative practice. As was shown to us so beautifully by Sister Gabby, Vic, and Cynthia in their presentations yesterday. Do you remember? That helped you to move into your own center and what you really are. That is what the whole thing about. Now, this was a little introduction, and for my presentation, I forgot to remind about that. For that presentation, I will be explaining a little the story of how this mindfulness started to develop in 1979 here in this country, how I met Jon Kabat-Zinn, what has happened with us there, and then the PowerPoint, I will present to you something that I presented 3 years ago in Harvard. There is a meeting, annual meeting of researchers in mental health. 1 year we do it in Harvard, other year in Worcester. And this year was in Harvard. We prepared this presentation for all the researchers of the area, mainly of New England. And I will follow those particular slides. But let's see, to go a little with the story. Meeting Jon Kabat-Zinn first. This was 1994. I was working in a community health center in Worcester. And I saw the advertisement of the first Body and Soul conference in Boston. And I said, oh, I can go there and see all those famous people, you know, that are going to be presenting there. This was organized by Interface in that year. And I have the T-shirt that I got, and it's not for sale or anything like that, because it belongs to Ruth, okay? With the list of all the presenters, Robert Bly, John Borisenko, Matthew Fox, Jon Kabat-Zinn, Dean Ornish, Bernie Siegel, et cetera, Brian Weiss. 1994. I was not here in 74. 1994. Yeah, big difference, yeah. 1994. Anyway, I went just... And I noticed that Robert Bly was giving the keynote speech, and he has translated many of the Spanish poets into the English language. Antonio Machado, Pablo Neruda, Juan Ramón Jiménez, etc. And I told him, I approached him, and I says, I have this tape, then was not CDs, was tape, of Juan Manuel Serrat, a singer from Barcelona, that sings the poems of Machado. And Robert Bly told me, I would love to have a copy of that. And I says, okay, I will bring you this tomorrow. This was in the Park Plaza Hotel, 2,000 people, packed. And I got that tape to him the next day, and thank you, he gave me a bag with many of his books dedicated, signed, that I keep at home. And in the early meditation, he was doing also a little poetry after the meditation in front of all these people. And he went there on the stage with his vest, his sitar, this huge guy, you know. And he says, I am going to dedicate this poem to my friend Fernando that is sitting here, you know, and that is from Spain, and he loves Machado like me. I said, okay. And he started, brum, 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 you know. The wind, one brilliant day, called to my soul with an odor of jasmine. The wind, one brilliant day, called to my soul with an odor of jasmine. In exchange for this jasmine odor, I would like all the odor of your roses. I have no roses. I have no flowers in my garden anymore. All are dead. I will take the cry of the fountains the yellow leaves, the dry-up petals. The wind left, I wept. Soul, what you had done with the garden entrusted to you? Soul, what you had done with the garden entrusted to you? After that, Jon Kabat-Zinn then was to introduce Bernie Siegel. They were in the front row also. Came next to me and told me, says, do you like this stuff? And you speak Spanish and you live in Worcester? And I says, yes. He gave me his card. Do you want to have lunch with me next week? Anyway, the moral at that point, what you had done with the garden entrusted to you, is that every human being, without exception, has a garden that came to this life to cultivate. But we get distracted. Your father tells you, I want you to be a doctor, or you are a loser, or this, or you get married to the wrong person, or you go in the wrong job, or someone take you and use drugs, and you forget completely about your garden. And you go out there and says, well, I love to help people. Everybody wants to help people. But do you know how to help yourself? No, that is too difficult. I prefer to go to the psychologist or to the psychiatrist or whoever to fix me. Or be hypnotized or whatever thing. No. You came here to do something very important. And then the more important role in your life is to find about what is your life for. And in the workshop that I will be doing tomorrow, I am doing a little like Sister Gabby, you know, it's going to be very interesting. We are going to be exploring those things, okay? Also in Crotona, I will be doing a five-day intensive for the first time, 7 in the morning to 5 p.m. every day for 5 days, you know, moving, swimming into it, a training. Anyway, I went to have lunch with Jon Kabat-Zinn the following week, and we start chatting, finding a little about my background, and he asked me, well, where is this interest coming from? He says, I am a theosophist. I am a member of the Theosophical Society. And he told me, says, the white Buddhist? Olcott and Blavatsky? And says, yes, exactly. And I met Krishnamurti in India. Do you? Yes. We were there in 82. Oh, I love Krishnamurti. Okay, yeah. And how you know me, he asked me. And I says, well, I saw you on TV, that program of Bill Moyers, Healing and the Mind. I saw you there, you know. And we talk a little more and more and that. And he finally says, do you want to take the training with us? And I told him, it's too expensive. It's $2,000. Don't be concerned about that. Do you want to take the training? And I says, okay. The curious thing here, and it's two paths crossing, his path and mine. He was having in front of him $500,000 from the Nathan Cummings Foundation to have an inner city program to see if his program of 10 years in UMass that has been very effective to the middle class, U1, was equally effective in the inner city. And he was needing now, immediately, someone speaking Spanish and was able to understand the stuff that he has been doing there. I took the training, class number 4. I was approached by the teacher. Fernando, John, want to talk to you. Okay. I went to talk to him. Do you want to start teaching in May? He says, I don't know the curriculum yet. I just half of the 8 weeks. Do you want or not? And of course, you says, yes. We will see later what is going on, you know? And I started to teach the program. 35 patients from the inner city came to that 8-week cycle. He came to the first two classes to observe my style teaching. He didn't understand Spanish, but he was trying to see how I was handling the patients. And then he invited me to become director of his inner city program that I run for 6 years, started to teach in English, also in the main clinic, main hospital. And one day he told me, "You don't think I hired you used to be the director of the inner city?" And I told him, "No, John, you hired me because you want me to expand your program through the Spanish-speaking countries, Latin America and Spain." And he told me, yes. But he told me also, go very, very careful. Never imitate me or any of your other colleagues. Teach from your own heart and from what you know, because then we'll be credible. If you try to imitate other, people are not stupid, they will notice. You are just repeating something from someone else. No, you need to have your own practice, you need to cook your own stuff deep inside, you need to understand it if you want after to be able to teach this. And I will never forget some of those recommendations that he gave me, because we are very, very important. Now I go a little to his story. He graduated from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology with a PhD in molecular biology. He has been teacher of yoga in Cape Cod when his parents were having a house, summer house, and he was also, he went to Japan to take some Zen teachings, and he became director in Cambridge, there near Harvard, of the Vipassana Center for a little bit. That particular area of the planet where something was cooking, you know, in the 70s. Anyway, he came to Worcester, to the hospital, to this place, to start working, because he felt that he will not be able to follow his career. He was not good enough, and he was exploring something new. And when he came here, he approached several doctors and asked them, "How do your patients respond to treatment? How many of your patients improve?" And the answer was in between 8 to 10%. That was. Why? People don't take the medication. The doctor doesn't listen to the patient. 8 to 10%. Then I imagine he scratched his head. What we can do to change this? And he decided to create a net that was able to catch everybody that was falling through the cracks of the system, to teach them something useful in which they self were able to improve. Not as a substitute of whatever treatment was there, but as a complementary approach to that treatment. And it's when he wrote this 8-week process based on the Satipatthana Sutta of the Buddha, but without mentioning Buddhism, nothing like that. And he started the program calling a stress reduction clinic. And he put it in the medicine department, not in mental health department, because mental health was troubling, was, you know, stigma. And he didn't call it yoga classes or meditation classes or mindfulness meditation. No, 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 stress reduction clinic. And everybody then went under the sign, "Oh, I need that. I need that." Doctors, nurses, patients. But nobody knew what was going on in that class until they came to that class. Doctors started to send patients. Patients started to improve, to get better. Nowadays, I think in our clinic, now it's all over the world, but in our clinic, over 19,000 patients have gone through the program. 19,000, and many doctors has come to try the program and see what happened. The other important thing is after being 1 year and a half doing the program, the medical director of UMass came to his mini office. His office was a little, one of the size of one of these bathrooms here, you know, in the second basement. And the director, medical director came and says, John, I have the understanding that you are doing this program. Yes, is any problem with it? Says, no. I love it. I think it's great. But you need to start to do research. Because if you don't do research, you are not going to go anywhere. And John says, okay, we will do that. And he started with two studies, one with chronic pain, another with anxiety. And I will talk a little more when I go through the slides. He went through, et cetera. Meanwhile, in another site, the Mind and Life Institute, that has celebrated now their 25th anniversary, was being taking place. And that took place because Francisco Varela from Chile, neuroscientist, that was in La Sorbonne with his laboratory there for many years until he died. Adam Engle, businessman, approached both Buddhist practitioners, approached the Dalai Lama, asking His Holiness the idea of exploring the brain. And they told the Dalai Lama, do you think you can provide your monks if we provide our equipments? And the Dalai Lama says, why not? They have already 15 gatherings or 16 gatherings, book came from this through the years. In the second gathering was in Dharamsala, in the house of the Dalai Lama. And Cisco Varela, John Kabat-Zinn, Sharon Salzberg, Daniel Goldman, Richard Davison, all went to that particular presentation and the book. They will have it in the bookstore. Didn't arrive yesterday. I think I have the paper here. Yeah, it's Healing Emotions, Conversations with the Dalai Lama. John presented the program there, says, here is what we do in the hospital. And after the whole presentation finished that day, one Buddhist scholar from Europe, you know what you mean, like this, came to him and says, John, what you are doing is trash. What? How you dare to do that to the Dharma? How you dare to do that to the Dharma? He took him in the corridor and told him that. He was devastated. He says that he didn't sleep in the whole night. Next morning, he went to see His Holiness in a corner too, John, and asked him, what do you think about my presentation yesterday? And you know the Dalai Lama, with his kindness, got his hands like that. John, how many Buddhists are in the planet? 50 million, 60 million, I don't know the number, but number, you know? How many human beings? The Dharma need to reach every single human being in whatever language they understand and they can benefit to alleviate their suffering. Continue with your work. It's a magnificent work. Now has expanded all over the place. Has expanded all over the place. Anyway, he came back, wrote Full Catastrophe Living, Using the Wisdom of Your Body and Mind to Face Stress, Pain, and Illness. Bill Moyers read the book. He did the series Healing and the Mind. Our program with one of Stanford was called Healing from Within. And the phones started to ring like crazy. Everybody was wanting to get training. Ba, 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 ba. It has been like a... Why he did it in a hospital? Who goes to the hospital? is, like he called it, a magnet of dukkha. A dukkha magnet. Suffering. Every time who suffers, go there. Mm-hmm. And in one occasion, and I will start with this now, is he told me, he says, Fernando, what happened in the inner city? I had never teached in the inner city, and you're teaching there every, you know, who has been now for a couple of years teaching there, and people that go there are very sick, and with very little resources, and the stress is humongous, and I told him, says, yes, they are in between depression and anxiety, and it's like a pendulum, you know? One day they are very depressed, the other day they are totally anxious, out of their mind. Says, the thing in this particular program that they learn through the practice, and they take it very seriously, is that pendulum starts to go slower, 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 until one day through the process of 8 weeks, normally week four, week five, is stopped for an instant in the middle, and they are able to taste the nectar of harmony that maybe they had never tasted in their whole life. And the good thing with that is they will never forget. In the moment you feel that unity with the whole, and you notice how compassion and wisdom come through all your cells, you never forget. It's a turnaround. The poverty continue, the problems in the neighborhood continue, your cancer, your illness continue, but you are a different person. Something happened. And I had seen it again and again and again. Mindfulness and Health. I gave you a handout. Was written by Carl. I talked to him. I don't know how to write. In this case, I talked to Carl, and he write the paper. The paper that I gave you. He's the one doing that. We are very close friends, and he's the director of the research and the mental health research. Here we are. We have now a meditation every single Thursday at 7 in the morning in the Biotech One. We have always in between 7 to 10 people, mainly psychiatrists, coming to the meditation. That is 1 hour. And this will continue now forever. We have created a revolution in the system, not only there, in many other places. Here is where the Stress Reduction Clinic became the Center for Mindfulness under the Department of Behavioral Medicine. The director of behavioral medicine is Dr. Judy O'Keen. She is still the director. She was the boss of John Kabat-Zinn. But I worked with her also with tobacco treatment that I was doing because she has been one of the pioneers of smoking cessation. But anyway, here you have John there. Jan, now he has the white hair like everybody else. Here, Saki Santorelli. And here was my teacher. This is Ferris Urbanowski, the one who told me, John, when I talk to you. Here is Elana Rosenbaum. She was diagnosed with lymphoma, went through the treatment. She's fine now. She has been fine for 15 years since she has the whole treatment. She almost died, but she is fine now. And here you know this guy. And this is in our house in Worcester. The picture was taken by Ruth in my library, in our theosophical library, is where we sat, the whole group, to cook up this creation of the Center for Mindfulness. That was the first step. What is mindfulness? The awareness that emerges through paying attention on purpose in the present moment and not judgmentally to the unfolding of experience moment to moment. Moment to moment. Mindfulness-based stress reduction is the original program, MBSR, founded by John, 1979, is 8 weeks, 2.5 hour classes, between 25 to 35 patients with all kinds of conditions, I work with a cardiologist in Florida. He was wanting to have only heart patients, and I told him, no, we need to have a pool of patients with different conditions. You can put some heart patients there because it will be the best way to replicate the classes in other places. It's very difficult to have homogeneous, people with the same condition and have the right number. And also, people tend to compare if they have the same condition. If they have different conditions, there are only human beings suffering in the same space. The condition is not the highlight of why we are getting together there. The classroom become to me, and in the inner city, we have been talking about that, a temple. It's time the teacher goes in and you go through the door. It's a safe space for 2.5 hours to explore what means to be human, to explore what means to be alive, without being judged, without being criticized by anyone. And wisdom and compassion show up very quickly when you create that kind of space. We have formal meditation practices and awareness of everyday activities. And this varies. Some people are more good at the formal, other people are better at the informal, but the results are the same, no matter what the combination. How is mindfulness different than relaxation techniques? With mindfulness program, you are not trying to produce any special state. You have a greater awareness of the mind as it is in the present moment, and it's applicable to any situation. You can do the practice anywhere. The only exception is when you are driving. Health benefits: increase awareness, mind and body, thoughts as passing events and condition, and relationship between thoughts and emotions. And again, this tomorrow, we will do practice in some of those things. And leads to decrease automatic reactions and stress. Clinical research: MBSR has been demonstrated to be effective for chronic pain, anxiety, depression, and other complaints. Reduce psychological stress, increase well-being, reduce physiological response to stress. And now, look at this. 1980, the program started. The medical director told John, you need to do the research. He did these two studies on pain and anxiety. Few more studies came later on. Little by little. Look now. Annually. Paid by the National Institute of Health, by incredible foundations. Look what has happened. Because it's effective. We have the visit 3 or 4 years ago of the director of the National Institute of Health, the CAN division, Complementary and Alternative Medicine. And she told us, after having 15 years of research on all the alternative process, the number one that came out was mindfulness meditation. That was the number one that really make a difference. But she was needing markers in the brain in a way that all the researchers will be able to approach the research in equal manner. Because to do research is tough. Some of the good researchers take 2 years to prepare a study, just the preparation, then there are not going to be flaws into the study. And finally, in this series, mindfulness-based approach to wellness, a holistic is physical, mental, and spiritual. Strength-based, vast potential of inner resources to promote one's own well-being, supports a culture of wellness. And tomorrow I will be moving up through practical approach to all these things. Now, mindfulness induced neuroplasticity. Until 10 years ago, it was thought that the brain doesn't change. But since the MRI and the fMRI started to take place, that has changed. In Wisconsin, at the University of Wisconsin with Richard Davison, some studies were done. This was done with people from a corporation. And it's in the paper I gave you, it's a little the description there. And what showed that people that took the mindfulness program, the cortisol levels in situations of stress were lesser. And also, the influenza vaccine was more effective with people that has taken the program. Okay, and in the paper that I gave you is the description there of these two studies. But the good thing is the benefits of the 8 week is not only, doesn't finish in the 8 week. Can go for 1 year, can go for 3 years, and the people are still maintaining the benefits that they got in the period of 8 weeks. Control group, meditation group, response to the vaccine. A lot more efficiency in the people that are practicing mindfulness meditation than in the ones who are not. And here again, shift in the prefrontal activation. And I will show you some pictures now. Because the certain areas of the brain that they didn't think that they were able to talk, they start talking. Neural changes. Here you have a little the limbic system, the primitive area of the brain, the frontal lobe, the amygdala, and the communication that start to take place when you practice MBSR in between the amygdala, the area of emotions that are unfulfilled, that is still obscure, that you have been put in there because you didn't know how to handle them when you were 3 or when you were 11 or when you were 18 and you keep them there. And the reason area of the brain. Before the MBSR program, you have the negative emotions you want, or the know how to solve, not to solve emotions. And then in the post-MBSR, the prefrontal area start to light up. See it in the circles over there. And look what happens. Prefrontal amygdala. It's how they found and they are talking to each other. Is how they found and they are talking to each other. When you go through the process of the 8 week of the stress reduction program, when something alarming happens that scares you, suddenly the prefrontal spike up and says, calm down, nothing is going on. Keep it quiet. You know, you start to see the things more clearly. You start to see the things more clearly. And then you don't get more aggravated. And these studies here, several collaborators in our department. Now in the last part of my presentation, I want to bring you to my experience in psychiatry. 4 years ago, I went back to a community health center to do tobacco treatment, and a position came in the hospital. And the people from Massachusetts, the authorities on addictions, told me, Fernando, are you going to apply for the position in the hospital? And I told them, I am very happy here in the community health center. We enjoy our day, and you know, the people are friendlier and all those kind of things. Says, but it's going to be a big task to not allow anyone to smoke in the area of the hospital, and we need to give some service to the patients. Says, okay, fine, I will apply. I apply. They gave me, I asked for more money, and they gave me whatever I was wanting. They gave me the money. And in the moment I went in, the program was under psychiatry. The chairman of psychiatry came to me and says, Fernando, I don't understand why John Kabat-Zinn and Zaki Santorelli never put their program in psychiatry. I want mindfulness in my department. And says, but I was hired to do the tobacco treatment. I said, don't forget about that. You do half of that because I don't have money. You do half of that, and the other half, I let you to do whatever you want. Anyway, I started to develop, and soon I was having a program in the acute units with acute patients. I was scared to death the first time. I had never been in one of those units in my life. And they told me, do you want to do something for the patients here? And I said, well, I will go to one of the classes and see. And I said, there, and people that have tried to kill themselves, that are totally psychotic, that the schizophrenics, you name it. And I went to one of the classes, and they are, Mary threw the ball to George. Good girl. And the patients came to me. They treat us here like little kids. It's like they are following the book, you know, in the treatment. And I said, okay, I will give it a try. I started, first two classes I had done over 150 classes in that unit. Then they asked me to go to one of the inner city people that are homeless and that, because of course discrimination. The one who pays, they had nicer unit than the other. I went to the other. And then finally they told me, can you work with the adolescents? But these ones are not the acute. These are the ones hospitalized for 3 years, 4 years, from ages 11 to 18. And I did training to the staff, the 8 week, to all the staff that work there and all those kind of things. And that was incredible. Has been an experience. We were seeing yesterday in the presentations, those eyes. How they touch you. That is what happened to me there. Was transformative. Was tremendously transformative. Shake me from the ground to, wow. And I have been told that you cannot teach meditation to these people. Why? Doesn't need to be 3 hours of, no. But to move within into the center where they have the problem, here. You notice when we start the practice where I took you to put your attention, where? The feet. Why the feet? Because it's the place that is farther away from here. That is where all the problems are. And we forget about our feet and has been taking us from here to there all these years. We ignore them completely until we have a big problem. Anyway, I moved from community health centers to psychiatric wards to maximum security prison in New Jersey. I was invited. They paid me a couple of years ago a whole 25% of my salary to do this program in prisons. A researcher from Rutgers University came to visit us, and she told me, says, do you think you can do something? I said, I don't know. I had never done it. And I went down there. I visited several prisons with her. And finally, she says, we will do this in maximum security females. What? Did you say that? Well, we will do it, and we did it. Anyway, mindfulness, life jacket of emotional intelligence. When life gets tough and starts to grasp you from the core and shake you, this particular practice is the one who helps to keep your head over the surface. Until the water starts to, and the currents start to go in your favor, and you start to swim again. That is what people learn. How to survive in those very difficult moments. Helping overcome emotional distress. By the way, everybody that goes to one of those psychiatric units, the acute, you read the chart, emotional distress, emotional distress. They have all the same thing. It's not truth, but it's how they call it. The mind healing the mind. The mind healing the mind. Because it's the only one that can do the work. And that is the work of Hanuman, the monkey of the Ramayana, when he's commissioned by Rama, the Atma, to go to his rescue, Sita, compassion and wisdom, from the hands of the King Kama of Sri Lanka, that has kidnapped Sita, the kingdom of desire. Hanuman, the liberated mind, the one-pointed mind, is the only one who can save the situation. We are a bunch of conflict, all of us, the contradictions. We want this, but I do this. I want that, but I... We need to learn how to bring all our energies, that fohat that we call pranas, in the same direction, in all levels. And we can do that. We don't need to wait 20 incarnations. Can happen right now. Or bringing our attention from the head into the heart. Into the heart. A taste of harmony in the midst of chaos. And this is what I develop in the acute unit. I always start, I can go 5 minutes extra. Yeah. I always started with a story. Those people that came to the class came with sheets on their head, like this. They had not talked in a week. They were, and says, how I can bring their attention to the room? And if I notice that the majority of the 20, 25 mental health patients were females, then I talk about the story when I met my wife, Ruth. I was raking leaves under a pepper tree in California in this beautiful place. And this couple from Australia, Linda and Laurie, came and introduced me to this beautiful girl from Massachusetts. I tell the story like that. Says, and was like, you know, love at the first sight. Like Cupid was, and all the ladies in the group, really? And what happened after? And they put the sheet from the head, and the one who has not talked in 1 week started, oh, wow, what is going on? Immediately. And if it's young kids, the story is different. If it's big guys, the story is different. But always the story, personal. Personal story. Bring them into the room. Bring them to the here and now, to the present moment. Then, the grounding, physical, and we will do some of those things tomorrow here. They have been too disconnected from the body. They are all over the place in their mind. One is there, oh, you know, I am the president of this institution. I love your classes. When I leave this place, I will make you my assistant or whatever. And of course, it's like I am Napoleon or what? They come with those things to tell you. They are completely, some of them derail. And the next is the silencing, the silencing. In the last part, after I make them to do the lion, I have the whole class with 20 people. Okay, we are going to do the lion. Okay, and of course, in the unit, the other people, doctors and everyone. Ah! I said, and don't do this in the street. And says, I know, they will bring us here, you know, again. We will come back here. But it's just to create the necessary tension, and then now we are going to meditate. We are going to meditate. And then is notice how the chair can give you all the support that you need in this moment to be fully present in your own presence. And they know. And they know how to accommodate themselves. And then the psychiatrist tell me, he said, we don't know what you do in that class, but after you leave for 3 or 4 hours, the whole unit is like peaceful. Something has happened here. Something has changed. The bloom of the present moment. Past, too much past here, depression, passivity. If we are too much in the future, anxiety, aggressiveness. But what is the only moment that we have to be alive? What is the only moment that we have to be unconditionally alive? The present moment, stability, assertiveness, control of your life. Moving out from automatic pilot that we are most of the time, and started to be fully present in whatever you are doing, no matter what. Lost in the middle of the dark woods of my life. From the Divine Comedy, Purgatory. More or less, something like that. A situation, I am lost. An opportunity to find myself. An invitation to embracing wellness, taking care of myself. A practice, the cultivation of mindfulness, taking responsibility for my own life. Taking responsibility for my own life. Then, if you are lost, and with this I'm going to finish, I'm going to recite this poem that is going to be here, of David Wagoner. If you are lost, stand still. Stand still. The trees ahead and the bushes beside you are not lost. Whatever you are is called here. You must treat it as a powerful stranger. But you need to ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breathes, listen, it answers. I have created this space around you. If you leave it, you may come back again, saying, here. Not two trees are the same to raven. Not two branches are the same to wren. If a tree or a bush does, it's lost on you. You are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you. And I can add, life knows where you are. You must let it find you. Thank you.